Hello and welcome to Talking in Stations, an EVE Online podcast recorded live on Twitch. I'm your host today, Artemis Alboza from Mercenary Coalition, joined by my co-host today, Carneros from The Bastion.
Good morning.
This week on Talking in Stations, we're going to take a look at the comeback of Circle of Two with Da Vinci from Circle of Two.
Howdy all.
Then we'll discuss the unfolding drama between the EVE Online and Star Citizen communities with Gibberish.
Hey, how's it going? I'm Gibberish, moderator of our EVE and intimately involved in the whole Star Citizen drama.
Also a member of Greenswarm Federation. We'll also be taking a look at the CSM election results with Cetonia of the Felines of the Egg of the Lisa.
Hello.
We'll also be chatting with the player who is one old chat log away from the CSM, TikTok.
Hello, first place loser.
And rounding out today's show, we're going to have Hugh Caswack to give us the news of the universe from this week.
Hey guys.
All right, so let's jump right into it. Da Vinci, you're a member of Circle of Two. Can you quickly give us and the audience a brief history of the story of Circle of Two?
Well, it's an old alliance, so keeping it brief will be a challenge. CO2 was born in Vino a long time ago and was mainly a Serbian alliance. And somehow we got on the bench of the Imperium clusterfuck back then. In tribute, lived in tribute for quite a while, and then famously flipped during the war. Ended up with test in impasse, I think it was. And then again, something happened. And we ended up in Vale. And recently we moved from Vale to Fate, which is way nicer, way more space, and closer to our friends. In a nutshell, indeed,
that was very brief. And I'd like to take a moment. We're glossing over some very big news that happened. So the first big news that happened with your alliance is the flip from the Imperium during World War B. And then the second big news that happened was the judges flip from CO2 over back to the Imperium, seemingly transferring citadels, stations, effectively killing Circle of Two for a time, and streaming the whole thing live on Twitch, resulting in GigaX's eventual ban from the game.
Well, fortunately for myself, and unfortunately for you guys, I was on an extended break while that happened. So basically, I heard it, I followed it. Most people within the Alliance that were in the Alliance before I went on a break were still talking to me, so I got the inside story on most of that, but that's a taboo thing that we do not like to talk about. Judge did a thing, we're over that, and we're back. So the whole flipping in impasse with Test and Imperium and was an unfortunate mishap.
Okay, well, CO2's back, and you're back from your extended break. Could you go over with us, what is your role within CO2?
Well, before I went on my extended break, I was the head Diplo, but after the judge thingy, head and Diplo are not really words that we use inside of the Alliance. I'm kind of the guy that takes care of anything that could be considered politics. Because most people within the Alliance don't really care about that and like to settle things on the battlefield. But EVE has a meta game and you cannot settle all things on the battlefield, and then you end up talking to me. So that's basically my role in Alliance. Part of leadership, the one that talks. The token non-Serbian.
That and GigaX used to be famous for not being the kind of person who wanted to do a lot of conversation. He doesn't like diplomatic conversations at all, as I recall.
Yes, as you might well remember that, even during Imperial times and when all things were going quite nicely, no problems. When you poke Giggs about something where he has to talk about things, he doesn't like to do that. And he refers you to me. And that's basically how I came into this position. Giggs just kept referring people to me.
So the decision to move from Vale of the Silent, which is where CO2 initially reformed, over to Fade, was that a decision, or at least a discussion, which was referred in your direction?
No, well, we take most decisions, if not all, in consensus. The reasons to move from Vale to Fade were pretty clear. There was no room for us to realistically grow in the two constellations we had there, hemmed in between Pandemic Horde and Sea Renters. Realistically, you're not growing there. You're not visible. It's not on a front line. And CO2 being CO2 needs to be close to the action. We're not really interested in staying in the shade. And at the same time, there were several different Goon Sigs operating in the north. And yeah, well, it seemed as a nice place to move to. Consider that GOTG decided to abandon both Pure Blind and Fate. Pure Blind is kind of a mess to live in, and Fate seemed like a very reasonable place to reform the alliance for real.
Now, does that mean you're not going to keep the space in Vale as a sort of a shady spot in addition to the Fade?
No, the plans are that we just hand that back over to the people that gave it to us, because it's like, well, some distance away, so I'm not really sure how that would actually work if you live in Fate and then have like two constellations in Vale of Silent. It's a long way. We've done the move. It's not next door.
On the topic of CO2 reforming, when CO2 broke up, your member corporations sort of all went their separate ways. Some just sort of died down in activity a bit. Others went to Legacy, GOTG, even a few to the Imperium. As you're reforming, is the majority of your member base sort of old CO2 members coming back? Are you having any new groups who weren't previously in CO2? Talk to us about the composition of the new CO2.
Well, first, I cannot recall any corporation going to the Imperium. Can you name one?
I was thinking specifically like members leaving corporations, so I misspoke there. Thank you.
Yeah, well, it would very much surprise me if a corporation, as a corporation, went up in an Imperium. Well, we make sure that people don't have that mindset before they come into CO2. Most people like wandered about all over the place, which is like Triumvirate, Darkness, people went back to Venal also. Yeah, all over the place. I think there's one corporation that ended up in Nancy Dot and is still there. But most people, the moment they got the news that we were reforming, 5 minutes later, they all packed their stuff and came back to CO2. Why? I don't know. Must be that we are doing something right. But yes, we've grown from like zero people 4 months ago to 4,000 something. Yes, that's quite a... And most of them are old corporations that came back, that reformed to come back. So yeah, basically it's... I see a lot of faces I know, even from back in the days in Tribute. People tend to stick around once you are in CO2.
So taking it sort of a casual view at the largest of scale NullSec politics, many would put you as right now affiliated with PanFam, whereas previously you were affiliated with Legacy Coalition. Could you talk to us a bit about your relationship with the various quote-unquote coalitions that seem to be running the Blue Donut Aviv today?
I think we got them all by now. Ethereum, Legacy, and now PanFam.
Yeah.
Sorry, Carlos, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I'm agreeing with you. It does seem you've tried all of them, half
just
of them.
Just missing DRF.
And those are dead, so yeah. I don't know. It's if I look at the influence map, then we are colored like PanFam, I think. I don't really know why people would think that. Other people would say, like, yeah, you're meat shielding for GOTG. Well, possibly. If you're not NCPL or Goons in this game, you're always meat shielding for somebody. That is the reality of the meta at the moment, has been for a long time. So I think we are just fiercely independent. As long as you ally, we will probably be at your side until the bitter end. I don't know where we are at the moment.
Well, can NC dot dock in the DW Tech Keepstar?
Yes.
Yeah. It's some level of relationship there then.
Yeah, but well, GOTG can also, and a lot of other assorted groups. So where does it put us?
Roger.
An interesting point to me is the transition you made from Legacy Coalition to reportedly PanFam. Now, can you talk? You were away from the game at the time, but as you were coming back, as you were reforming, the decision to sort of join PanFam, was that mostly just because they had a couch for CO2 to crash on while you were building up your strength, becoming a 4,000 member alliance again? Or were there hard feelings with Legacy Coalition? What's the relationship there?
I think overall, the feeling about tests within CO2 is not a very good one.
Oh, really? What's the main cause there?
Give the viewers and listeners a little bit of history too, that Test and Circle of Two used to be neighbors in Vale of the Silent and Tribute at one point.
Yes, I think it was called Tesco back then. I think there was a very good relationship. But again, in the end, that is, it comes down to, again, Judge doing what Judge did. And Test then, Judge had a very independent approach to diplomacy. As in, well, he ran diplomacy for CO2 back then. And as far as I understand, he basically made deals with the tests the way he saw fit, which is not necessarily the way forward for CO2 as an alliance. And then something with Tree and Legion of Death happened. And yeah, probably something stupid like shooting the wrong tower or something. I don't know. It's Judge. It's very simple. If something went wrong in the past, it's Judge, and just move along.
So could you talk to me about the atmosphere within CO2, particularly like your line members, these folks who are coming back in, CO2 is reformed. What's the feeling in the air, if you will?
Well, at the moment, we're trying to integrate all the new people that actually did come to CO2 after we reformed and were not part of the alliance, in Impasse or in Tribute, more particularly the people from MOA and in Panic. Both alliances basically merged into CO2. So we're trying to, how do you say that, impregnate them with our culture which is a very specific culture. I think carnivores can confirm that CO2 has a very specific culture. So for this to work, growing and having the same vision, plans, ideas, feelings, we kind of need to stop growing now for a while and make sure that we keep people believing in the core values of the Alliance.
What are those core values?
I think a dislike of the Imperium is one. I think that's a kind of a trauma that we ended up with after Tribute and Flipping. And again, with the betrayal of Judge also. I think it's a nice narrative that will go on for like quite a while and that binds us together.
Also, I would describe CO2's culture as being PvP focused and more offense than defense in general approach, and raucous and aggressive sometimes. It's
Well, we would not be able. You mentioned a avatar or something being killed, which involves planning, and that kind of elite thingy is not really CO2. We are mainly aggressive, focused on PvP, and we like to take the fight to the people that we're fighting with.
High appetite for risk, prefers action. Yeah,
something along those lines. Well, you have lived next to us also.
Yes.
We would go on grid first and then poke you and say, well, we kind of need help here. That's a CO2 way of doing things.
So when you moved to Fade initially, it was during the height of the battle for various things with the Goonswarm SIGs up in the north. Then after the station patch happened, they moved back down south, reportedly for 2 weeks. And now there's been seeing some uptick in activity with them back up in the north. How is this affecting your plans to reform, affecting the Alliance culture of aggression?
Well, it's always nice to have your content on your doorstep. I don't see any issue with the SIGs coming back. I think Asher is back in RAR something, or maybe X-7, don't remember. Which is cool. They always claim not to be interested in soft. Now we have a soft secured in Fate, and we'll fight over, I don't know, Jawblind, Cloud Ring. That's content. I don't see it as anything really dangerous. It's content. Summer content.
Well, that's fantastic to hear. It's glad to see CO2 coming back into the Alliance scheme. I think your particular unique culture adds something that EVE Online just wouldn't be the same without.
Well, we hope to bring something that is new and fresh and will stay new and fresh for a long time.
So let's pivot the conversation a bit to something which a lot of people are saying is not new and fresh, and that is a new ship which was recently introduced to Star Citizen, another space sci-fi game, if you will, that the viewers may be interested in or may be familiar with. Gibberish, can you give us a bit of an overview of the situation and the drama that is unfolding over this?
Oh boy. So this all started when Star Citizen launched a new ship called the Vulture, which looks almost identical to the Venture. Same color, they barely even changed the name. So a thread got posted up on the REVE subreddit and got a decent bit of traction, but didn't explode. From there, one of their mods reached out to us and sent us a pretty arrogant mod mail, kind of demanding that we take down the thread and gave us a definition of what they call brigading, which I'll explain at some point if you need to. But It requires to remove every single mention of the ship copying on the entire subreddit. Gorski Carr kind of gave him the finger and said, no, we're not going to remove this at all. So I decided it'd be a great idea to take a snippet of that mod chat where they're sort of demanding this and leak it to the REVE Discord. From that point, the judge went and submitted a thread, which got all sorts of traction. He ended up getting quoted in, I think it was Kotaku, Massively OP, and a couple other sites. But what really kicked it off was CCP jumping in on Twitter and kind of doing a little flattery as its own, I forgot the exact quote, something about flattery. It was fun.
I believe imitation is the highest form of flattery.
That's the one. When they did that, though, as soon as CCP tweeted, it got crazy. They started coming into our subreddit, reporting every thread, going into the comments, downvoting, so on and so forth. And I'm not going to say REVE was innocent in this either. There was definitely some subreddit harassment going on over there as well, and still is. It went into Discord. The REVE Discord got sort of pseudo-invaded, but... let's just say the REVE Discord doesn't have the highest brow of chat, so I don't even think anyone noted. But they counter-brigaded into their Discord, and hundreds of people were sort of flooding in there. It got big. I don't even know how to describe the amount of reports we've had to clear in the last couple of days. Every time I'd go into the mod queue there and just sort of see what was going on and all that good stuff, and there'd probably 30, 40 reports every 5 or 10 minutes for, I don't know, 20 straight hours. Now, those are important because if your mod queue is flooded with reports, you can't effectively mod, right? So there's plenty of people that were actually doing bad stuff on the REVE side that we had to take care of.
Now, can you quickly talk us through, you mentioned brigading, and you said you have a definition for it. Can you walk us through what that is, and particularly, what is Reddit admin's position on it?
So, brigading on Reddit is an intentional disruption of a community. The admins haven't been particularly clear or precise with what that means. Like you're allowed to link another subreddit. So REVE was allowed to link threads in our Star Citizen. But if you were to say, hey, go in here and downvote these guys or go in here and harass them in some way, that would be brigading. But you're still allowed to link and talk about it. So it's kind of this confusing, muddled mess that they've never really clarified. So the only thing you have to really go off of is, okay, well, what happens with other subreddits who've been shut down for this sort of thing? And what happens with other subreddits who haven't been shut down for this sort of thing. So we took a look over at, there's two subreddits dedicated to Star Wars, actually. One for the prequels, one for the sequels. And they're constantly invading and brigading each other, but how they're doing it is posting memes and talking about it. They'll even link to other threads, but they're very careful with the wording. So we sort of towed that line. I don't want to say we didn't instigate it because we definitely instigated it. There's no doubt in my mind. I mean, I stick you to thread to the subreddit that was there for 1 second. Need some water. I stick you to thread to the subreddit that was there for the last 24 hours that was basically calling them out. And yeah, we definitely stirred the pot a little bit.
So what's the hope that people are trying to get out of this? Is it just everybody's looking for some good old drama, or are we trying to maybe push back on the invasion of IP, as it were, and intellectual property? What's the motivation here?
I mean, at first it was mainly just tongue-in-cheek making fun of how they kind of copied the ship, but I don't think anyone actually cared that much. What sort of provoked people was the response from the Star Citizen subreddit and the Star Citizen community in general. I don't know how to begin to describe how deep the Star Citizen rabbit hole goes. I had no idea, but let's just say their fan base is fervent. they will religiously defend every single thing Star Citizen does, just to the death. It's kind of ridiculous. So our response to them basically calling the EVE community in general the worst thing to have ever happened, because, you know, we dared criticize their game or dared pointed out that, hey, you know, you kind of blatantly copied the Venture. There's no doubt about that. You didn't even change the name. It's the Vulture. I mean, come on. our response to this was just sort of saying, bring it on. Come at us. Call us whatever you want. Call us the worst community in gaming. Go for it, because no one takes down an EVE player better than another EVE player.
On the other hand, if you know about gaming but don't know EVE, the EVE player base does have a fearsome reputation and can be somewhat intimidating to other game players. So they may have overreacted just based on their perception of who EVE players are.
Let's talk about that perception a bit, particularly in the context of the media swarm which has been generated by this recent drama. We know that we've had articles on, I believe it was Eurogamer, Kotaku, I think one other that I'm forgetting. What's your opinion, Gibberish, on the impact of this, what value it has?
So Star Citizen kind of relies on basically donations and confidence that the project is going to get finished. I mean, it definitely does. I'm probably quite a bit biased at this point, because I went from not caring about Star Citizen to pretty much anti-Star Citizen at this point. So take this with a big grain of salt. I don't think that project's ever going to get finished, and I'm definitely riding in the scam bandwagon here. But what we've seen lately with that community is, especially over the last couple of weeks, there was a drama they had where if you spent $1,000, you would unlock the ability to purchase a $27,000 ship package. Now, that's not a joke. You had to spend $1,000 to even see the $27,000 ship package. So that caused, now if my understanding is correct, that caused a major backer of theirs to pull out, and he's suing the company trying to get a refund. And what we're kind of seeing is an explosion of negative reaction towards Star Citizen and how the company is sort of treating its player base. Like, they really banked on that. They really wanted to make that game that everyone wanted. You know, everyone who's a sci-fi nerd, everyone who likes EVE or Elite Dangerous or whatever, they all want that total immersion, full awesome MMO in space. And honestly, I think they took advantage of that. They took advantage of something that people have been waiting for 10, 20, 30 years, and just put it into the bank. But their community is slowly disintegrating because of this. That $27,000 thing was big, and this is just another thorn in their side that they really didn't need at the moment. I think the longer it stays in the spotlight, all the negative aspects of Star Citizen, the more likely we're going to see Star Citizen implode.
You kind of got three levels of conflict going on here, or three areas going on here. You've got your player communities and Reddit communities conflicting with each other. You've got a little bit of interaction between Cloud Imperium and CCP, where where it looks to me like CCP sort of started with a playful engagement, you know, in Twitter, which, as a marketing professional and a game dev, that's like ideal. That's a fantastic interaction. It gets you attention from the players. It gets your name out there. It's just a wonderful gift to the marketing folks. I'm actually surprised at the reaction from Cloud Imperium that they didn't grab that gift and go back and forth too. But just what that tells me is whoever is operating their social media account is a game dev and not a marketing person, because that was a great gift. And then separate from that, you've got your games media who are looking for opportunities to write basically inflammatory articles that are exciting and dramatic and passionate that will get views. So they'll take anything drama related and they'll pump it up. But the nature of that interaction is it's going to be short-lived. So it'll go for a little while, but as soon as you're not getting emotional heat from it, they'll go on to the next cool, exciting thing. Whether or not you can say there's a trend that the community is dying or going down or something like, I think that's projecting outside the scope of what you can see from this short-term interaction.
That's probably a fair assessment. I mean, I did say I'm definitely biased. I'm not even trying to hide that.
But, I'm biased too. I used to be in charge of Eve marketing at CCP. That will leave one with a bit of a bias. Yeah.
I think CCP handled it quite well. Their response, I agree, was absolutely perfect. They kind of made light of it, but also poked fun of it. And I think what Robert should have done is really encouraged his people to sort of embrace this and use it as a lighthearted sort of meme war, I guess. I think that would have been a lot of great publicity for them. And the fact that they took it so seriously is, I don't know, it was not a good play, let's put it that way.
Another play, which is probably not very good, is mistreating your fan base, mistreating your supporters. And I can tell you one group of individuals who doesn't mistreat their fan base, who appreciates their supporters, is the Talking in Stations show. I'd like to take a break from the show and thank our angel level sponsors on Patreon: Ingress, Keldura, Skeptic Nerd Guy, Victor Koraka, and Whimsical. It is these and our other patron supporters that allow us to bring Talking in Stations to you every week. If you'd like to be a sponsor, go ahead and check us out on Patreon.
Thanks, guys.
We're going to pivot the discussion a little bit towards the CSM, and I'd like to start out with something which is more drama, starting on Reddit. Gibberish, can you walk us through what's going on with posts coming out about the judge reportedly buying votes to get him onto the CSM?
Considering my name appeared in that thread, how do I approach this? So, the accusation is, I believe it was New Eden News blog, basically came out and said, yeah, the judge bought something to the tune, I believe their claim was around 450, 500 votes, something like that. And that I was supposed to be intermediary of it, and they shot it down. I think that's the correct timeline here. Now, I'm going to say this is 100% true. Definitely 100% totally not sarcastic true. I would like to know who their source is, and I would like to honestly get a chance to respond. They haven't reached out to me, and I talked to the judge about it. They haven't reached out to the judge about it either. So it's just kind of like, okay, so you're getting, supposedly you're getting this information from one source that judge is buying all these votes, and you're not actually going to talk to him or me, because my name came up in that too. So I'd like a chance to speak to them personally.
Well, I'm right here. So yeah.
Let's go.
So, I mean, I wrote the article on the basis of some research from our team and from the data we got. We did actually reach out to the judge. Our staffer said ours did, because he knows him, and the response was along the lines of, "I don't want to address any kind of hatchet job article," which we thought was upsetting, but you know, that's very reasonable.
When did you reach out to him? Was it before or after the article was posted?
We made the decision to do afterwards because we thought there'd be problems if we reached out and warned him before the breaking news came out. But you know, that was a decision made by the kind of editorial team as a whole. So you know.
So let's focus for a minute on the impact of the bot votes, or even not even the bot votes, the CSM results as a whole. Now, we have TikTok on the show, and we've gotten the data for the number of votes which came out. Some people have done some initial analysis on it. Steve Renokin has done a very good article, in my opinion, at least in the beginning stages of this analysis, on what the votes mean, what we can learn from it, and sort of the narrative of the CSM election. And one thing that came out was, if you discount the reported bot votes, I believe this was part of the article which Hugh wrote, if you discount the reported bot votes for the judge, then TikTok is on the CSM. So TikTok, what's your take on this?
I mean, as far as I know, buying votes is totally legal and within the realm of Eve. It's kind of like when I lost my grimoires to a dear friend of mine, or ex-friend. It's painful, obviously, but at the same time, I can't do anything but respect the person who just out-meta-gamed me, basically.
Can I just help a little bit for our newer members and everything? CSM is Council of Stellar Management. We just had a voting season. The accusation of vote buying, I should point out, is with interstellar credits in game currency, not with real life money outside the game. And this behavior isn't actually against the rules of the game, just so you know. It's unusual, or to some degree. It's happened a few times in the past and been meaningful, but it's not standard operating procedure in a CSM vote. Is that fair, guys?
I don't know if I'd agree with that, honestly.
Well, the best example would be CSM 11, right, with Bobmon, where he was put on the CSM by a large amount of votes from I1ISK.
Well, I mean, it's pretty obvious that CSMs make deals with other groups in exchange for votes and ballot position. I mean, large alliances have come out and directly said this. It's no secret. Is that any different? I mean, if you're negotiating, hey, we'll put your guy on our ballot at number three if we put yours on number three, or, you know, exerting influence over a smaller alliance, for example, to get on a ticket, is that any different than just directly buying votes? Honestly, I kind of view it as the same thing.
I think it's all in the same, I see Eve as kind of like a dystopian, like ultra-capitalist, like universe. And in this context as well, it makes sense to, it doesn't really make sense from a democratic point of view, but there's no real way to enforce like one vote per one human. And so it kind of makes sense, right? Like if Gibberish, like if I have 10 accounts and you have 20 accounts, then obviously, you know, from like a raw business point of view, maybe they should listen to you more than me.
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting take on it. I'm not so sure if CCP really wants it that way. I mean, given why the CSM exists. But from a purely business perspective, yeah, the person with the most accounts wins, I guess.
Well, it's a combination of the most accounts that are paid Omega accounts. And the person was willing to go in, take the effort to actually do all those votes. That's, you know, that's not trivial. I would count the diplomacy as a slightly different and more normal thing than vote buying. It's interesting because the tone of the coverage on the Eve Reddit forum is that the vote buying is a big negative, when in fact, it's more just a neutral part of Eve gameplay.
Yeah,
that's go on,
TikTok.
I'd like to follow up what Sutonio said. As far as I'm aware, without actually having been on the CSM is basically a 10-man focus group. You know, CCP.
That's accurate.
Says something and then and you can give feedback. And I feel like, if you are such a stereotypical Eve player that you actually know how to out-meta game the other candidates by, for example, buying votes or making backroom deals, I feel like that puts you as the ideal Eve player and probably in the know of what's going on.
Yeah, but also means you can't act on it. So your account behavior is being watched constantly. You can't take advantage of anything you know. So you're at a disadvantage on something.
But I didn't mean that you are in the know, like with inside information, more than if you know how to meta game, like how to buy votes and well, even just think about it, that kind of tells that you know how Eve works on a fairly deep level and you're part of it, like you're really deep in the culture. And that probably makes you a decent CSM member.
So Dirk McGurk actually said something in the stream chat, and I remember him saying this on Twitter a while back as well too, which is the purchasing of SP farm votes basically, you know, there's people out there with hundreds and hundreds of accounts that they extract skill points from, and that's all those characters do, and then sell those for money. Well, each of those accounts gets a vote on the CSM. So I think that was an unintended consequence. I don't believe CCP meant to do that, but I also don't think they can do anything about it without major changes to the way this all works. But it's, well, it's interesting.
Five years ago, if you wanted to run for CSM and buy a large number of votes, you would have to talk to a large number of people, probably. There weren't that many people with scores and scores of accounts. I knew of very few. Then came I Want ISK and some of the big casino type operations where they had more cash and more reach and sometimes a bunch of alts. And maybe you could just talk to a few people there and get a fair amount of leverage. But now they've got these skill point farms where if you can find the people, because they're not super visible, those characters are not all logged in together, you know, chatting in Jita where you can go walk up to them. If you can find them, then you can talk to maybe just the one guy and get a whole bunch. So it's worth your time. I'm pretty sure that advanced players or even intermediate players would figure out that, hey, if I go to Jita and buy a whole bunch of skill point injectors, I can maybe see who's selling them, figure out who the bigger ones are, and go from that to contacting them to see if I can put a deal together. If, after all, they're probably financially motivated to make these big skill point farms, maybe they'll be open to a financial offer. That's a reasonable thought.
So I can say it's a lot easier even to find skill injector farms than that. Most people just throw them in one corp. So you'll have, you know, 500 characters sitting there all in the same corp, no kill boards, similar naming scheme, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So you would just contact that corp CEO and there you go.
So now there'll be more competition next year.
It's kind of a scary thing. It really is, because we're hitting that point now with this SPFAR thing where in theory, anyone with either just a good amount of planning or a lot of raw ISK can effectively just sweep the CSM election with character accounts that don't even play. That's kind of a scary thought.
That's an interesting point to make, because if we think about the CSM in terms of a focus group for CCP, if you will, and we look at sort of what types of individuals you want representing the EVE player base on that CSM, what are we thinking the impact of this potentially new barrier to entry, right? For people who can't afford to buy their votes. What's the impact of that on the makeup of the CSM?
Well, for one thing, it means you're going to get people who think about min-maxing as part of how they approach EVE. And those people are in a position then to then have CCP initiatives presented to them and help pick them apart for how they could be abused. So in some ways, it's almost a positive turn of events. Keep in mind that at no point in the course of a CSM does the group vote on anything. They don't have any of that kind of input or that kind of leverage. So having, for example, having five Imperium members currently on the CSM doesn't mean that the Imperium or the Mitanni is going to be able to get stuff voted on or anything. That's not how it works. Now, my participation in CSM has always been on the other side of the table, the CCP side. So I have a bias to my viewpoint on that too. But the main purpose is CCP presents materials to the CSM and says, give me the player reaction. Give me your reaction. Give me your constituents' likely reaction to this. Where do you see holes in it? Where do you see how positive would this be viewed? How negatively would this be viewed, et cetera? It's a fair amount of work.
Can I, apart from the vote buying, if that actually happened or not, for me that's not really that important. It's the imbalance, now that the votes are in, on the CSM itself. I can just see that a lot of groups are not represented, and most representatives come from one block. That in a representative body within a game can never be a good situation. My two cents.
Representation across the board is healthy and helpful. As someone presenting to the CSM, I would want I would want there to be people there who know about different subjects that I would be presenting about.
There's another angle to this too. If buying SP farms for votes becomes a very standard thing, and CCP doesn't do anything about it, it could potentially actually sway CSM voting power away from Null Block. Because right now, right now they have their tickets and they basically pick most of the CSM spots just because they're the largest groups and they're the most organized. But this kind of enables other groups through ISK alone to get those votes without having, you know, a large Null Block.
Before we go too far down that rabbit hole, TikTok, you have something?
Yeah. I'm actually not sure that I agree that it's not completely a vote, because if you have five Goon members, that means that you have, well, at least four fewer spots for, say, Wormhole people or HiSec people. I believe there's no one from HiSec right now and no one really from Wormhole space either. So yes, while there's not a vote, if CCP proposes something that would completely ruin HiSec or Wormhole space, there's really no one to say, hey, wait a minute, that's not right. So in a way, I do feel like there's somewhat of a vote in that you need at least representation.
The representation isn't voting, though. It's just providing subject matter expertise. And yeah, there definitely should be more Wormhole on there. I agree. The HiSec's a little bit different because a lot of the NullSec guys have more expertise on that too. You'd be surprised. But Wormhole needs more coverage, guys. Also, CCP is actually doing something about it, I'll point out. And that is, if someone is not actively participating, they will remove them from the group and ask the next person to step up. So it's not just, can you get in there? You have to get in there and actually work really hard.
Now, Cetonia, we're getting a perspective from Carneros as a former CCP employee who worked with the CSM. You are a former CSM member, current CSM member, and you're going to be on CSM 13. What's your perspective on this balance of perspectives issue as far as players coming from various areas of space?
I mean, I think it is important, and like 100% agree with everything that's been said already. There are a few more sort of things, like in the worst case scenario, let's just say, I don't know, there's 10 Imperium candidates and they all have the exact same very narrow range. That there's still things like blog posts that CCP reads. Like CCP is very good at reading things, reading community feedback, like the Reddit, the EVE Online forums, like in the past, like for example, before I was even on the CSM, I know apparently like the post that I was making on my blog were being discussed within CCP, for example, and there's several other examples where I've been on the CSM and, you know, like someone from CCP has linked, you know, a blog that someone's done or, you know, a podcast where they've talked about an issue like Wardex and said, hey, what do you guys think about this? And, you know, obviously they have their own opinions too. So even if you're not on the CSM or you feel like you're not represented by the CSM, I'd really encourage you to just be active in the community and, you know, post things, post blogs, you know, make a Wormhole podcast, for example. You know, I don't think there is one right now, right? Things like that are just great for getting CCP to listen to you. And also, the last CSM as well, I think we actually had I think it was five NullSec candidates. Initially, we had Jintan, Arif, Inamate, Vince Draken, who was replaced by Sword Dragon, which kind of the same sort of area of expertise. Even though we did have five NOSEC candidates, like they all were coming from like very different perspectives. You know, like Jin Tan was from Providence, which was NRDS and more sort of new player focused, lower SP. Arif and Innermate were, you know, very in Goon Swarm. Like Arif actually suggested a lot of really good things for, you know, very young players who are getting into trading, like market and economy related issues, things like that. And, you know, the judge suggested a bunch of other cool stuff. Even though it's five NOSEC CSM members, like they all had different areas of expertise on top of that, and they all like I've seen them all like suggest like really good things for the game.
There's a lot more to say on this, but let's actually pivot though to our next thing on the schedule and get a NOSEC, or I'm sorry, I guess it is a NOSEC news roundup. And for that, could we introduce you again to our reporter, Mr. Hugh Kaswak?
Hi, Conero, sir. Thank you very much for the introduction. So it's not strictly a NOSEC news roundup, as it covers both LOSEC and NOSEC. But obviously the first really key issue we have here, story-wise, is actually at NOSEC, which is about, from MNC, it's our understanding that war is very close there. So Winter Coalition has actually bought three Keepstars and a number of Fortizars, and they're placing them to defend Eastern MNC. They put their first Keepstar in EIH TAC IU, to my understanding, and that gives them a jump range over all of MNC. And this will be followed up by the Holy League deploying to YTAC FZ 5L. So this kind of indicates a massing of a supercapital and conventional subcapital force against Legacy's sort of holdings in Western MNC. And Legacy has noticed this. They have said, quote, shit has officially gotten real in a ping to their coalition. So it seems that whilst it might be a bit early to say there's definitely going to be a major war there, that's going to be an area to watch definitely going forward.
Nice.
The second news item is something which doesn't really make it to Reddit very much, which is that the Ethereum Breach Coalition has been continuing its campaign against Prothean Alliance in Ethereum Breach.
Who are the Ethereum Breach Coalition?
Yeah, so they're made up, I think, of Unspoken Alliance and Laserhawks, predominantly, and they're fighting Prothean Alliance, which are the last kind of holdouts of the old DRF. It's really interesting because my initial understanding, and the understanding actually of Unspoken Alliance, was that Prothean Alliance would flee following the station conversion because all of their stations had been lost. But unfortunately, unfortunately for the Ethereum Breach, Snuffed Out, which had seized some of the stations, actually sold some to Prothean Alliance. So, you know, sold them back to Prothean Alliance, which has given them more of a foothold there. So it's going to be interesting to see how that kind of conflict plays out going forward. So then the kind of third news item, as we look away from NOSEC, is actually the Galente Militia. So you might be aware, anyone lives in the north might be aware anyway, about Galamindistan, that Galente Militia have this sort of small holdout in Cloud Ring. And now they are mounting an offensive back into the war zone. They're fighting the Block in the system of Oisix. I can't speak Kaldari, I'm going to be honest with you. And that's really interesting because this is a grinding system siege, which is not a kind of combat you see anywhere other than in Faction Warfare LOSEC. And it's going to be interesting to kind of follow that going forward. And then the last kind of really major news item is that two Faction Fortizars have been destroyed. The first in Ethereum Reach, where Prothean Alliance one was destroyed, interestingly, by a combined Holy League and Snuffed Out fleet, which confuses me because Snuffed Out sold that Fortizar back to Prothean Alliance, so I'm not sure what they're up to. And then secondly, in Tenerifis, in XGH TAC SH, where a Legacy Force destroyed a Ranger Regiment Fortizar. So that's kind of the news, the kind of key headlines I've seen around for this week.
All right, thank you very much for those news reports of the week. I'd like to also give a quick thanks for all of our guests who showed up today. We have Carneros, my co-host, Da Vinci, Cetonia, thank you very much for your time. Hugh as well, of course, Gibberish, and TikTok. And that's going to be it for today's show. If you'd like to catch up on previous shows, you can go to talkinginstations.com and view back episodes, staff info, info about supporters, or how to support the show. All of that is put together very well due to the wonderful work of Keskora, our webmaster. Thank you to them. I'd also like to give a shout out to McLeod, our engineer, January, our producer, and Sarah, our
Other producer.
There we go. That's it for Talking in Stations.
Happy Father's Day, guys.